relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
Welcome, dear friends, to this special America First one-on-one. We are going deep dive with our good friends, our regular guests on the radio show, just to get to know them a little bit better. Today, it is an individual who has served this nation. He has worn the cloth of the Republic. And now, I don't know, what's the best description? He's just kind of a professional troublemaker, Jim Hansen. Is that good?
How about a provocateur and a counter-revolutionary?
Provocateur extraordinaire. How about that?
I like that.
All right. We got so much to discuss with him. He's got his new book. He's a very prolific individual. It's Winning the Second Civil War. Calm down, Media Matters. It says, without firing a shot. Don't get your panties in a twist, Zach Patrizzo. It's okay. Although this man does know how to shoot a weapon because, let's start with that, Jim Hansen, in a prior life, what did you do?
I've been accused of being an airborne oboe player in the Army band.
But that was the cover, right?
Yeah, that was my cover. Actually, I was a Special Forces Weapons NCO, so I was supposed to know about the guns. I was better at pulling the trigger than taking them apart, though.
You didn't do that blindfold race, that reassembly thing?
No, I did. I did that one time to pass out of the course. You had to take the five guns, put them in a pile, and they'd play the Jeopardy theme, which was hilarious.
Oh, fun!
Yeah, the tax would be there, and you're like... springs flying.
So I had an RSM when I was in the reserves with a regimental sergeant major who's God. I mean, he is just God. This guy, I remember his name. His name was Nick Butt, former SAS guy. Literally, his knuckles would drag. Smart guy, but he had these super long arms. Hardcore dude. And he was so pissed. Because they didn't know. I was a long-haired philosophy student when I volunteered for the reserves. So I roll up to basic training, get a haircut. And then we have the weapons training. And I'd shot guns all my life. And the Browning High Power is one of my favorites. When I beat him in the rapid reassembly of the High Power, the RSM, he may have had that cool badge on his wrist with the crown, but he was not a happy puppy.
They used to call him Screaming Skulls, was the Brit Army guys I worked with.
Screaming Skulls?
Screaming Skulls. Ran on caffeine and nicotine.
The hardcore guys love them all. Nick, if you're still with us... good times. Don't take it personally. Okay, so you were the weapons guy in the Green Berets. How many years in?
Oh, God, 15.
Wow. And now you are all over the place, social media. You are, of course, the head of the Security Studies Group. I love that, SSG. And you think that there's a civil war occurring?
Oh, I don't think there's really any question there is, and we're losing. Okay. So I think that's the real reason I wrote the book is... Yeah, you know, I segued from national security to domestic security because, as you recall, the oath says against all enemies, foreign and domestic. I think our biggest enemies right now are inside the country. I think they are, you know, right now trying to fundamentally transform it into something the founders would not only not recognize, but would despise. And I think we should stop them.
So let's start with the latest. I was on radio this morning with our buddies at Breitbart. And the news was that Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, former
Tool.
General. What?
Tool.
Yes, indeed. In not the good sense of the word, as in useful, the other sense of the word, tool, is in Asia. And he, as Secretary of Defense, as a black Secretary of Defense, he is publicly at a bilateral in his capacity as a member of the Biden cabinet, berating America for its anti-Asian racism problem. Which is ironic, because if Americans realize who the anti-Asian racists are...
I noticed something.
You noticed something, right? Mm-hmm. The latest, the woman killed in New York. Every time I see this photograph of another member of the minority committing a crime, the only thing I tweet, I think you might have noticed, is quote-unquote, more white supremacy, Jim.
And it's not. That's the sad thing. No, if you read the Biden domestic terrorism and domestic extremism strategy, it specifically talks only about domestic extremists, white supremacists, or militias. And it doesn't say a word about Black Lives Matter. It doesn't say a word about Antifa. And it ignores the fact that a lot of the violence against other minorities is committed by the one minority they're all trying to coddle. And I'm sorry, let's have a little reality. You know, if you want to play this game, let's talk about what people are doing. Let's not segregate and discriminate based on skin color.
Right. And when we talk about these new boogeymen, we have Mark Milley talk about wanting to understand white rage, the cause of January 6th, the quote-unquote insurrection, when we have Admiral Gilday, the most senior naval officer in America, talk about the persistent racism inside the Navy, and then we have West Point teaching critical race theory. The question is, what is the end goal of all of this? When are we going to have an address of real radicalism? Oh, let me ask you. You've got years and years and years in the Green Berets, in the U.S. Army. How many, just in a rough, I mean, how many dozen or how many hundreds of white supremacists did you come across, Jim?
I met one.
You met
one guy who was yet in all that time. I met one guy. He was a jerk. Everybody knew it, and it was almost a joke. You know, he was a comically bad white supremacist.
So when SecDef Austin ordered, first thing he ordered, a 60-day shutdown of the U.S. military, couldn't you have just sent him the name of this guy?
Yeah, we all could have pointed, it's that dude.
Is that...
No, I think the problem, Seb, is you asked, what is the end game? The end game is state control. The methodology they're using is the army as a social engineering laboratory.
Yes.
Because you can order the military to do things you can't make civilians do.
Right.
So they're doing it, and they're getting away with it. I don't know why we somehow assumed that the military was immune to that. But even O'Sullivan's Law, you know, which says any organization that's not explicitly conservative will become liberal over time. It's happened to the military, and now we've got a woke military that is less capable of fighting wars, deterring our enemies, driving ships without crashing into each other, and spends their time doing pride marches and calling particular members of the military racist. It's not helpful. It's a bad idea. And the nice thing is, it's easier to change back than it is in the civilian world.
Because it is a hierarchical organization.
Commander-in-chief, next to the one who comes in, needs to head over to the Pentagon and say, I read your paper. I saw that statement. I saw this. Get out.
Right, you're fired.
You're done.
But I have to ask you, and with your persistent connections in the military, in the national security architecture at Bragg and elsewhere, what is this doing to esprit de corps? What is this doing to morale in the meantime? Mm-hmm. You look at the situation with the police. We're going to do an hour-long special on my Newsmax TV show this Sunday, the Gorka Reality Check, on the defund the police movement and everything else. And look, I love Leos as much as I love, you know, our military. But if you hammer them, if you don't have their political back, if you defund them, if you use them as a petri dish for social engineering, what are you going to end up? You're going to end up with the good guys who've got skills leaving.
Yeah.
Leaving you with what? The guys who can't leave, okay? Mm. So, yes, it's easier to flip back. God willing, we have Donald Trump come back into the White House. But what are you hearing in terms of how seriously do people take it now inside the military?
They're scared. I mean, I hate to say it. They are scared because you raise your head or up or say the wrong thing, and you're toast. You know, you rely on, it used to be a meritocracy. You know, the military was the ultimate meritocracy. You got judged on your physical fitness, your capability to do your job, tested objectively, and got promoted based on those things. Now you get basically a social media credit score in the military for how much you go ahead and play by their games. And if you don't play, you're not going to get promoted. So they're scared. Morale is crushed. Because think about it. The one thing the military used to be is you said there, we only see one color. That's green.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Now, first you have to see black, brown, Asian, whatever. You know, the panoply of the rainbow flag plus.
The intersectionality.
There you go. Garbage. And you have to look at that first. How, when you tell the black troops that the white troops are repressing them, and when you tell the white troops they didn't earn what they earned and know they earned, it was given to them by privilege and by systemic racism, how can you expect them then to meld into a coherent, cohesive unit that has morale, good morale, and has esprit de corps? You can't, and you don't. So they're killing our warfighting capability with that.
And my contention, having witnessed it, having seen it with 5.5 years as a DOD civilian at National Defense University, 2.5 years at Quantico at the Marine Corps on faculty at the Marine Corps University, is the higher up the chain you go, I mean, basically 05 and above, it becomes basically expected. The political correctness, and especially when you get your first star, when you go to the capstone at Fort McNair, they become political animals, Jim.
Oh, yeah, they become politicians, not even animals. You know, I wish they had the animal instinct yet. Right. They have the animal instinct of a flock of sheep. You know, that's what they have. They no longer have the animal instinct of a predatory animal. They should be an apex predator. I want generals like Patton.
Yeah.
You know, I want guys like that who know that their only mission is to scare America's enemies into not even considering fighting us. And then if anybody raises their head up, to squash them flat. That's done. You got the perfumed princes, you know, as Colonel David Hackworth always called them, who now think that their main mission is to follow the whims of the politicians.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, it is sadly emblematic of the problem across the entire U.S., and unfortunately, it's killing our most important institution.
We need more Ajaxes. If you haven't seen it, there's an amazing, I think it's a Hillsdale lecture by our favorite VDH, Victor Davis Hanson, on the pattern American Ajaxes and the need for those figures that are a little bit barbarian, but that's what you need to protect Western civilization. Relief Factor. Have you tried every other form of pain relief only to fail and not find your answer? Well, try this incredible product that is providing liberation from pain to tens of thousands of Americans across the country, including Alicia from California. I'm a grocery store worker and have been working doubles during this coronavirus shutdown. At 52 years old, my two bad knees are not getting a rest. I literally limp to and from bed. 2 days into Relief Factor and the pain has decreased substantially. So thankful for this amazing product. That could be you. It should be you. Find out today the only way you can by ordering the 3-week quick starter pack at relieffactor.com. Call them at 800-500-8384. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening just like I do. And I promise you, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me, Alicia, and thousands of your fellow Americans. What have you got to lose except the pain? Do it today. 800-500-8384. ReliefFactor.com. ReliefFactor.com. I'm Sebastian Gorka. We're talking to Uncle Jimbo, Jim Hansen, DC, on Twitter. His new book we're going to discuss now is Winning the Second Civil War Without Firing a Shot. Okay, Jim, let's talk about why you wrote this book. We're going to go through a couple of the key points in it, but let's start with this concept of civil war. Why did you use that phrase? Full disclosure, I like to give recognition where recognition is due. My good buddy has the morning show on WMAL, Chris Plant, super guy, super radio guy. He has been saying, I don't know, 4 years now, 5 years now, that real civil war is just around the corner. Is that why you chose this title?
I agree. Yeah, I think the danger is that real civil war is lurking. And in order to stop it, we have to use all of the constitutional capabilities we have left. And we have enough of them to win. But we either treat this like a figurative war, you know, right now, or we will have a literal one later on.
Right. And so we've got to win it politically to stop it happening kinetically.
Yeah. And I think we've seen the start, you know, last year. If you didn't look at last year as a brush fire campaign by the left to intimidate, conduct domestic terrorism and be rewarded, then you weren't paying attention.
Right.
So I don't want our team to do that. January 6th was a problem because it was a 3-hour riot that gave the left a year's worth of ammunition to use against us.
We're going to talk about, let's dedicate a whole segment to talking about January the 6th, what it means to you, what really happened and what's happened since then. But let's talk about, let's get the worst scenario out of the way first. And I do not want there to be a second civil war in America. 600,000 dead in the first one was bad enough. However, if there were a real one, wouldn't the good guys win? I mean, yes, Antifa are a bunch of violent thugs, but they're good at sucker punches and clocking you from behind. Most of them don't know the difference between an AR-15 and a Hellcat, right?
There's a chapter in the book that talks about what would happen if the well-regulated militia, being the able-bodied citizenry capable of carrying arms, rose up against a tyrannical government. Now, like you, absolutely last thing I want, and I would do anything in my power to stop it.
Yep.
If it happens, don't you think that all of the people in the military who really are our team, not the perfume princes, not the politicians, do you think they're going to fight against the citizenry? They're not going to.
No.
And so this whole scenario that the Swalwells of the world want to bring up, oh, well, what could your AR-15 going to be against a tank? Well, I'm not going to go with my AR-15 against a tank. I'm going to go to a National Guard base, and I'm going to take those guys, and we're going to take one of those over and move out from there. So, I mean, the idea would not be a force-on-force of citizens versus the U.S. military. The first thing you do is you say, if you're in the military and they took away free speech, which would be a prerequisite for me, they took away the Second Amendment. Once those two things happen, I don't believe we have a republic anymore.
And the idea that the man who currently bears the title President of the United States actually says, well, you're going to need F-15s and nuclear weapons. The idea that missile silo officers are going to turn the key on nuclear weapons against Americans. I mean, it shows you what they think of
projection.
Their fellow American.
Oh, yeah. It's pure projection. As with everything with the left, they're projecting. But the idea is, if it ever comes to the point where they actually manage to subvert the First and Second Amendments, first thing we look at is a national divorce. All right, can we do this amicably through a constitutional convention or something and say, you guys hate us, we hate you, let's split the sheets, right? Okay, that's number one. If for some reason they manage to screw that up and are still putting a thumb down us and saying, no, you guys will just live shuttled to the edge of society and we do revolt, then it's a completely different story. And I think it would go the direction of liberty and patriotism, not arugula-chomping, latte-sipping soy boys.
Yeah, that's why we like him and his Twitter feed. Follow him, Jim Hansen, D.C. The book we are discussing right now is Winning the Second Civil War Without Firing a Shot. Let's talk about January the 6th. We get calls all the time because, the radio show is America First. People saying, well, it was a setup and it wasn't MAGA and it was the FBI and Hillary was behind it. My take is this. People were pissed, rightly so. Mm-hmm. Okay, rightly so. They went to Congress after President Trump told them to peacefully support what was going inside, to peacefully march there. Some yahoos were dumb that day, committed crimes, should pay the penalty. Other things occurred which were massively suspicious, such as police officers pulling back barriers, opening doors. And then things were even more suspicious. One of the key individuals who photographed or filmed the death of Ashley Babbitt is a Black Lives Matter extremist who calls himself a revolutionary, who called for violent revolution in America on camera and was wearing a Make America hat again, Make America Great Again hat that day. So what's your take as a national security professional of January the 6th, the so-called insurrection?
Yeah, I would not call it an insurrection in any way, shape, or form. It fits none of the requisites for that. And I agree with your characterization. I think there were people from our team who broke the law, who committed violent acts, and should be punished for those. I don't think they should be punished as if this was the Second Civil War and the Fort Sumter moment. It was not. It was a political rally that got out of hand. All right. Well, okay. How many of those did we look at during 2020? Where there were peaceful political rallies that got out of hand and half the country burned down. Yeah, nobody seems to be real interested in holding a commission, to investigate $2 billion worth of damage, dozens of people killed, and thousands of police officers injured. So I don't want to hear that from the left. It's garbage. We need to take responsibility for it. And the thing that worries me, Sebastian, I think they're trying to goad us into a second one. That's what they're doing with a lot of the oppressive measures and the social media censorship and all the things the Biden team's doing with their domestic terror strategy. They want another flare-up to to justify more emergency measures. And I'm begging everybody, don't give them one.
Yeah.
Don't give them one. Put every ounce of effort into constitutional means through 2022 and 2024. And then after that, let's reevaluate. I'm not saying that that means that then we'll go kinetic, because I don't think we'll have to. I think we're going to win. We just haven't been focused on this. So stay cool and fight hard legally.
Yeah, don't let them provoke you. We'll talk about next year in 2024 in a second with Jim Hansen at Jim Hansen DC. But let's talk about this. I see everything that's happened in the last 6 months, specifically what's happened in the last few days with this select committee, as an attempt more than to goad us, but to truly criminalize conservatism. It's not the idiot with Nancy Pelosi's podium. If you wore a red hat ever, if you voted for Donald Trump, you are to be put in a category that is to be unpersoned. Do you agree?
Without a doubt. And they're showing their cards. Thank God they're showing their cards, because they're so full of themselves and they're so deluded right now that they're giving us their playbook. So when Biden did publish his domestic terror strategy, he admitted in that they're going to partner with the social media companies to go ahead and censor conservative speech. Then Jen Psaki brags about it from the podium, The little freckle-faced fascist. And that was another beautiful moment for us, because every time they do that, people can't ignore it anymore. So they are literally outsourcing the censorship they can't do under the First Amendment to Silicon Valley, and creating a national thought police under contract to the Biden administration.
And not only that, admitting that they will be using private companies to scour the social media accounts of serving military personnel.
Because right now, they want to create a hate speech exemption and an extreme speech exemption that allows them to push the window of what is actually before was terrorism and material support for terrorism into now what should be and actually is protected political speech.
Right.
And our protected political speech is the only one they're interested in. They're not interested in the other guys.
No, outlawing political dissent is the target here. All right. The book is Winning the Second Civil War Without Winning a Shot. And we're talking to Jim Hansen. Jim, let's go a little bit more in depth into the current situation. You have a chapter here, The War of Ideas. Why is it that conservatives do not understand, even now, years after he has left us, what Andrew Breitbart taught us and what Reagan taught us, that the facts aren't enough? You've got to communicate them. I've been searching every day now, 2.5 years on my radio show, for somebody to tell me, why did we seemingly consciously drop the ball on this one?
I wish I had a great answer as to why. My favorite quote from Andrew has always been, politics is downstream of culture.
Right.
And what they did is they started in the culture. They started creating television shows, and they'd insinuate things that they wanted to socially engineer into those shows. And, they'd catch a little bit of flack for it. There'd be headlines for a day, and then there'd be more the next season. Then they took over academia, and they did the same thing. They started in universities. Then they trained the next generation of teachers to believe the Marxist and Maoist-based concepts that make up wokeism. And now they're teaching those at the kindergarten and up level. So by doing that, they have snuck a march behind us and took over the minds of the next generation. So we've got 3+ generations now who don't know the facts about the founding of this country, who don't understand why we have federalism. You know, why does the Constitution exist? Why is it not just a dusty old parchment, you know, written by bald white guys in wigs? Well, it's the second best document after the Bible on earth. So because of that, we have to reteach those things. So the War of Ideas says we can't assume that anybody younger than you and me actually knows this. You know, Gen X is the last generation that was taught about America. After that, they were taught that America is bad. America last. So now we get back to teaching them, no, actually, America first. We're exceptional because individual liberty trumps state control. And the War of Ideas is our individual liberty as exemplified by the founding documents in this country versus statism and totalitarian authoritarianism that they believe is what we need to control people who don't do what they want.
Okay, that's the conservative world. Let's go inside that into actors. My contention, Jim, is that the GOP is the second biggest problem. I have a fear that after Donald Trump left politics or was forced out of politics, a lot of establishment people went, now we can get back to being the puppy dogs of the Democrats. How much of an obstacle do you see to that mission of getting us back to where we should be, the actual GOP establishment?
The biggest obstacle on our side by far. And I would equate them to, we were talking about the Pentagon. They're the perfumed princes who would rather do the bidding and be beloved by the political class than to do the hard work, the pragmatic work that needs to be done. And so we're going to have to push them out of the way. You know, and that's one of the things we can do. If one of the things that really makes me feel good is I feel a groundswell now. People have had enough. You know, there's plenty. There's COVID.
Because of CRT and COVID.
All of it. All of it. And they're mad. They're like, what can we do?
But are people building on that?
I think so. I think there's more instances of people taking control of things that before. Because one of the contentions in the book is that we were focused on national security, foreign policy, and business and families.
Yeah.
All right. They were focused on fundamentally transforming America. All right. We did our job. They did their job. All right. The problem is now they're actually in sight of toppling the republic. So we have to focus on what they were doing and stop that fundamental transformation. I think people see that now. It had to get bad enough. You know, it's like most things. There's a tipping point. It had to get bad enough that all of a sudden people saw, well, wait a minute. They're forcing us to get experimental drugs. You know, they're locking down schools. They're doing all the things they did with COVID. They're teaching them racist things. And all of this is happening right in front of our eyes, that, and it can't be ignored anymore.
Yeah.
That's really, they've roused the silent majority who will be silent no more.
We have to build upon it, and we have to build upon it now. So, Jim, you've written a new book. It's called Winning the Second Civil War Without Firing a Shot. I'm going to ask you, let's talk about first things first, social media. You understand information operations, you understand irregular warfare. Do conservatives have an answer for the social media challenge? Because we hear all this titled, you know, Section 230, we hear break it up. I don't see anything happening, even if we win the House and the Senate. So what is the right answer? Is it creating these conservative ghettos of, you know, Getter, Parler, and Rumble?
I think we have to. I mean, I don't think that's the solution, but it has to be part of it. When we're trying, look at the Soviet Union. They invented something called samizdat, which was passing information around underground because they couldn't pass it above ground. That's how they built something that got to be above ground. So you have to do that. I think we also have to fight every place we can and refuse to accept the fact that they did us a favor with this partnership with government, because that's illegal. That's literally, there is a case somewhere in the 70s that said you can't, as government, coerce or partner, collude with private companies to do things you're not allowed to do as government.
Right.
All right? They're doing that right now.
So what Jen Psaki said is exhibit number one for Donald Trump's case.
I know. His lawsuit's not my favorite thing, the way it's set up, but he was absolutely right. The colonel in the middle of that lawsuit that says the government is now using social media to do things it can't do to shut down political speech, 100% correct.
Why do you not like the way the class action was set up?
I don't know. The lawyers I know don't like it. So okay. I'll jump out of that quickly, because I don't know enough to argue that point. But I'm glad it's filed. And now what we need is we need more, and we need the lawyers who think they know how to win cases on other things to file more, because that's what the lawfare is, legal. You know, that's one way. That's one of our constitutional means. So file lawsuits. Another good angle is consumer law. A lot of states, and that's where we can do things at state level since we don't have federal power now. So the states should be passing laws like Ron DeSantis did, one of my favorite governors, and Abbott in Texas. They're getting stuff done that says you're not allowed to discriminate in our state based on political affiliation. And your terms of service say you don't. So now there's a tort that people can use to sue in those states. And they should be right now. If you're a rich person on the right or a libertarian or some of these Bitcoin guys, give money to do that, because they do. We need to sue. We need to make it too hard and too costly for the tech companies to continue what they're doing. That's how we beat them in the end.
Let's talk about the other side for a second. Jim, to win any war, kinetic or otherwise, you know, Sun Tzu taught us 2,500 years ago that you've got to understand the enemy. You've got to understand why you're fighting and who you are, but you've got to understand the enemy and what they believe and what their strategy is. I have a contention, and I haven't used this with you. I want you to be a kind of sanity check on me. Things are a little different in comparison to the Clinton years and to the Obama years. The left today is super dangerous. I mean, they are out of control, whether it's 2 million illegals across the border, whether it is packing the Supreme Court, lowering the voting age, on and on. It is a sucking chest wound to the Republic. However, there's a peculiarity to the current situation whereby they have no Kissinger. They don't even have an Axelrod. The current Democrat Party are hardcore ideologues. Kamala Harris is the perfect example. The hardcore ideologues like AOC or cretins like Kamala. I mean, really dumb, quantitatively dumb people, which is dangerous. I mean, if you've got an ideology or you give in to ideologues and you're stupid, you can be just as dangerous as many others. Mm-hmm. But do you share this analysis that they're not? There's no Machiavelli on the left now.
The inmates are running the asylum.
Okay.
And good for us. I would much rather have idiots as an enemy.
But you've got
to
exploit that.
Well, okay, then let's do. Okay. And here's how. The nice thing is, one of the things I go through in the book is kind of the progression from the Cold War to the current time. And I start the activist age in Obama because he, you know, Black Lives Matter was born during his time. He said,
community organizing.
Yeah, he was a community organizer. Trayvon looks like my son. The police acted stupidly. He told the activists that their causes were just. All right. And so they were still, but they'd been slowly doing it. And then it bumped up during Obama. And then when Trump came in a lot of ways as the antidote to what Obama had been doing to the country, they lost their minds.
Right.
They ripped the masks off and they said, you're damn right. We do hate this country. And we want to burn it down and build a new one. And that did us the biggest favor they could do us because people needed to see that. You know, they seemed reasonable before. Can't we all just get along? You know, shouldn't we care about poor people and minorities and women? You know, and yes, those things are real and true. While they were doing that, they were also sliding their socialism in with it. But it was subtle. They lost that. Trump made them crazy. And so now we have the crazies ascendant. And God bless them. Good. Please show that, you know, fly the freak flag. And that'll tell our team who we're actually dealing with and make them more likely to fight.
On that issue, the freak flag, it's also my belief that one outside of COVID shutdowns, parents seeing the insanity of CRT on their kids' Zoom classes, one of the biggest good triggers is this extremist transgender agenda that you know, white suburban moms are going to say, what? That hairy guy's using my daughter's restroom? Mm-hmm. Do you think that also that could be one of the good catalysts?
Absolutely. You know, and I don't care what someone does. If you wanted me to call you Susie, you know, and I just out of decency myself, I'd call you Susie.
Yes.
I wouldn't believe you were Susie.
Right. But also you wouldn't agree to the government forcing you.
No. I don't believe the government forced me to do anything.
That's you know, why Jordan Peterson's famous.
Yeah.
Right. Really? Because he said, okay, I would call you that out of politeness.
Right.
But the Canadian state ordering me to and calling it a crime if I don't.
Right. And that's where your point about suburban moms. They're like, I am perfectly willing to treat people nicely and politely because I'm a decent person. Right. You can't tell me I have to believe that someone can change their mind and change their sex. You know, so they made gender. The words that now make up gender are meaningless.
Yeah.
Right. They're absolutely positively meaningless, which was unhelpful to, you know, being able to understand people. But you can't change XX to XY with the power of your mind. And telling people they have to pretend that's true is another thing they're doing to drive people into our camp. And again, please do.
Yeah, I think we just have your new tweet, Jim Hansen's tweet. You cannot change XX chromosomes to XY chromosomes through the power of your mind. It is science denial. We're seeing a lot of science denial, aren't we, with regards to masks?
Oh, God. I can't believe they're going to try this again. Thank you. Again,
yes.
I thank you for idiots for our thing, because the numbers don't justify it.
So
that's the thing.
This is, so I kind of studied under the head of my department. When I taught at National Defense University, the head of our department, the War and Conflict Studies Department, was a guy who'd physically been to every bloody insurgency on the planet, even as a plebe at West Point. He took the summers off to go to Laos, which is nuts, okay? And he said one of the rules of irregular warfare, and we are in the midst of an irregular political war, is the insurgent, and you call us the resurgents in your book, the insurgent plays for the breaks. When the other side are cretins, good. Exploit their cretinism. When they, as you said, when they rip off the mask, that's when you shine a very bright light on their blood-stained fangs and their admission of who they are. Okay, good. All right. Jim Hansen, the book is Winning the Second Civil War Without Firing a Shot. You go through numerous action items with regards to the election last year, the warfare of politics, the flip of von Clausewitz. You talk of a resurgent right and the counterattack. Let's talk about the man that forced the left to take their mask off, and that's my old boss, President Trump. I can't be convinced to change my mind because 3 years is a lifetime in politics, but at the moment, I want him back in office, and I know he's going to run because the situation is so bad in this stinking city that we have to have a berserker in chief. We have to have, as you said, that, you know, a guy who hires people like you or Kurt Schlichter to go into the Pentagon and fire those generals if they are, you know, ministers of wokeism. We need to have departments shut down. We need to have departments moved to Wyoming. That's why I support him. I don't know if he'd be a berserker in chief. He was pretty good at, you know, crushing the China last time. Where do you see the future of the 45th president?
Like you said, it has to be a member of the fighting wing.
Yeah.
Trump will do the job. I think he had issues with not bringing the people I think he needed into office. I think he listened too much to certain people very close to him who gave him bad advice about personnel. So he would have to fix that problem to get my full support. But I would vote for him 100%. And I think he did one thing no one else could have done at a very pivotal moment that I believe saved the Republic. He beat Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
All right. No one else in the Republican Party could have done that. And because of that, we got 250 federal judges and 3 SCOTUS justices. Can you imagine if there were 3 more, you know,
activists,
Sotomayors or right. Kagans? Editing the Constitution, we would have speech codes. Hate speech would be exempt from the First Amendment, and they would be busy with Beto O'Rourke knocking on my door. Bad idea. trying to confiscate guns. So he saved the Republic, and I believe he could do the same again. I believe there are others who could, too. Like I said, huge fan of Ron DeSantis. I think he has shown executive skills that have been exactly what we called for a lot of times that I wish Donald Trump had done. But I don't care. I'm going to back our guy because this is a team sport. And whoever it is, if they don't come from the fighting wing, we are going to be in a world of hurt. We could potentially lose this.
Let's talk about that one issue you raised. I saw it up close. It was bad. It's not just the advice the president was given within the White House. The challenge we face should he win again is I don't see anybody building a bench. We didn't have a bench. There was like 20 of us, real MAGA guys in senior mm-hmm. positions in the White House. Who's going to build the bench for America First, Jim?
I would tell you right now, we're working on that. I have friends, a lot of whom you know, and we are trying right now to beat the RNC out of the way and let the donors know that there are competent professionals who understand the fight we're in and who know how to do information warfare, who know how to deal with federal agencies, who know how to deal with the media to fight the social media wars. And instead of giving money to the RNC, give money to organizations that are made up of the fighting wing of our party. And I'm sorry, there's nothing happening in the RNC right now that is helpful to our cause. So the sooner the people who fund the right as a whole recognize that, and the sooner we reach out to the libertarian right, the Bitcoin millionaires, the people who see that stuff, and they start putting their money into this so that they don't end up living in a socialist woke paradise, the better capable we'll be doing it. There are people working this issue, and I just would like to encourage people to reach out. I'll point you their way.
All right. I am very, very happy to hear that news. Jim, on the issue of the bench, you're taking action. But I qualify that with the last 30 or 40 years of spending on the conservative movement. Mm-hmm. It has been a disaster. If horrible. I see another, I love the Washington Times, but if I see another billionaire suggest we need another full page ad in the Washington Times, say, you do know who reads the Washington Times, right? You do know the circulation. You do know it's a newspaper, and this is 2021. So are you seeing, and I'm not interested in names, are you seeing people with money who understand we have to do things differently in the age of Twitter, Facebook, and, you know, AOC?
Yes, but the problem is still there is a political class that I call the idiot cousins at the country club, you know, who run political consulting firms, who bill $500 an hour to do a 30-second dark flashing red voiceover political ad.
Who never lose clients right, when they fail.
I know.
Never.
No, and that's the problem. So I think if the message is anything, it's there is a new warfare underway. It is information warfare. It is something that the reason I left national security is because I know how to fight this fight. We used to do it overseas in support of U.S. strategic interests. Yeah. And guess what? You don't know a single thing that I did. No one in this audience could point to a single place where my fingerprints exist on things we did because we're good at it.
Yeah.
All right. I'm bringing that mentality and putting with the other people I know who fight like that together the kind of team that is going to fight to win in ways that matter now, not in ways that matter when Eisenhower was president.
It's called Winning the Second Civil War. It's got a blurb from some guy called Kurt Schlichter, so it might be good. Winning the Second Civil War Without Firing a Shot. The book is by Jim Hansen, our guest. Follow him on Twitter at Jim Hansen DC. Jim, last big question, I think. We've talked to. It's so nice to have a discussion with somebody who not only cares for the nation, who not only served the nation, but who understands the practicalities of winning political wars. Not just, you know, the back and forth pendulum of elections, but actual political warfare in the interests of the Constitution. Let's go to something a little bit more metaphysical. After the last 18 months, and it's shocked me and it's saddened me, as a man who chose America as the land I want to live in and be a citizen of, the extent of cowardice under COVID.
Yeah.
Just the sheer idea that every business, except a dozen or so, would actually comply with things that are illegal. You cannot shut down business just because.
Yeah.
The idea that people are still putting masks on their little children at playgrounds, devoid of any common sense, because we know that the mortality rate for children is 0.05%. So talk to me about whether or not it's as bad as I see it, and what we're going to do about that deficit of courage.
It is as bad as you've seen it. And it's partly that they're pushing and have been training the populace to be sheep.
Yeah.
Because they don't believe in individual liberty. They don't believe in the exceptionalism that is this country was founded to make sure the state can never tell us what to do. Literally. That's the whole reason. We fought a war we won, wrote a constitution for that simple reason. And we've lost that. In a large way. As a country, we've lost it. We haven't lost it because there are 75 to 100 million of us who in some way, shape, or form are willing to do it. Now, the left are flock animals. They're sheep. They're happy with that. It makes them feel good. They're comfortable. They don't want to be separated. And our problem is you always hear eagles don't flock. Okay. Cool. Great term. Yeah,
thanks.
You're a super cool eagle guy.
Right.
But lions hunt in packs. All right. So get yourself in a pack with other like-minded apex predators. And if you're not an apex predator, hide behind one, walk behind one, support one. You know, get behind the people who know this game and then start pushing back. Because we're right. That's the advantage we have. Our ideas are right. Our ideas are constitutional. Our ideas work. theirs don't.
Yeah.
So stand up and think of a shield wall. Go Viking with this, right? I'm Hanson Swanson Pearson. I'm 100% Viking, all right? I play this game. Link arms in a shield wall and you're stronger, all right? So don't, if you want to band together, don't separate yourself and think you're alone. You're stronger with your friends. So tell them. Bring them to the school board meeting. Bring them to the city council meeting. Tell them to vote. Tell them to talk. Tell them to fight.
So this is exactly what I wanted to end on. What the left so geniusly did with the Open Science Society foundations of George Soros, with the prosecutors' elections they supported, they really, I mean, it was a bumper sticker, politics is local. They turned it into a platform for warfare. They mm-hmm. turned it into a way of life. Isn't that the answer that Absolutely. We, you know, national politics is sexy and we live in the swamp and it's cool and it makes it onto the news, but really it's irrelevant. We take back the republic, one school district, one local supervisor, selectman election at a time, correct?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And if we don't take back education, we'll never win the game. So that's the place to go. And that's where I'm heartened. I see a lot more fights at school board meetings than we did before. And now they're calling them out. What do you mean you're teaching this? Let me see the curriculum. You can't do that. I want cameras in the classroom. You know, you're not allowed to hide from us this indoctrination of America's youth anymore. And that, to me, if you start there and then go to the city council and move it on up the food chain, yeah. And then we get to vote for president and we can have, you know, fun with the political national game. But local has to start first, and it's easier.
The book is Winning the Second Civil War Without Firing a Shot. Jim Hanson is the author. Follow him, Jim Hanson, DC. Also, he is the president of the Security Studies Group. Last message to those out there who just happened to come across this podcast, this video. What is your message to them? They may not know, you know, what irregular warfare is, but they may be concerned about the future of the nation they live in.
There is no safe space on the sidelines anymore. I don't care what you do, but do something. Get in the fight and we will win this. We are not going to lose to the left. All right. They are no match for our ideas and our people. So, like I said, get in the fight.
Get engaged and we will win. Thank you, Uncle Jimbo.
All right.
Thank you.